A4.
Number 12B.
We have seen that each synonymous term refers to the infinite one. It isn't a part of the infinite one. It is always depicting the infinite one in a specific way. And so as each synonymous term depicts the infinite one, they naturally must overlap. They must have a relationship in between them, not only a relationship to the whole, but also a relationship from one synonymous term to the other synonymous term. Yes, is that clear? That they are like circles that overlap, and each one overlaps with all the other ones, because they all have one common denominator. Each one of them refers to the infinite one. Therefore, these synonymous terms combine in many, many ways. I didn't quite say in infinite ways, because I would like to be a bit more modest, because numerically, if you have seven, you can't have just infinite combinations, I guess, as far as my mathematics goes. But we can see that there are combinations, many combinations, and that naturally every combination gives us a new information. If we combine a 7 with a 5, we get a new information, either 57 or 75 or 5/7 or 7/5 or things like that. Every time we combine in a definite way values, we get a new value. And so it is in Mrs. Eddy's writing that we encounter these combinations. The combinations she uses are manifold. You have very often the combination, say, of mind and spirit, that she would speak in a sentence of mind or spirit, or mind, comma, spirit, and I will take one or the other of these references, which means that in that sentence she is not just wanting to accentuate mind, but she also wants to accentuate that mind is spirit and not matter, and so she will bring in combinations. So what I want to say is this, that Mrs. Eddy didn't play around with the seven synonymous terms, that because of literary beauty or so, she would take in here a synonym and then perhaps here and there take in another one. You know, when at school we had to make, what you call that, when you had to make an Aufsatz? A composition, huh? You call it a composition, huh? Then I remember our school teacher at that time was very meticulous to see that we did not repeat the same word in the same sentence or in the next sentence, huh? That's the old style. So, Mrs. Eddy didn't just write something about mind and then because she couldn't repeat mind in the next sentence, she would write spirit, huh? And just make it more beautiful. Huh? But her synonymous terms have a very definite value when she uses them, and she uses them, as we'll see when we study the text, uses them very specifically and intentionally. Or we have a very common combination that she will speak about principle, comma, love. Not just principle. Many statements are just principle, but in many cases she will combine it and say it's principle, love, meaning that the principle she is talking about is not principle as God, but the principle which is love, compared with the principle that can also be life, or compared with the principle that can also be mind. And she would speak about the principle mind. So, or you know that she would very often speak about life and love. And so one sees that she must have in that text a definite reason why to use not only life, but also life and love. And like in mathematics, that's the spiritual mathematics, that a combination of numbers bring forth a very specific new value. She not only would combine two synonymous terms together, but would also do that in a greater number, in threes, and one of the very common combination is, as you know, life, truth, and love, that you would take this trinity of life, truth, and love as one chord, as something that expresses something quite different than if she would speak about life and truth and love. Or she speaks about mind, dash, life, truth, and love, meaning that she's speaking about mind. What mind? That mind which is the mind of life, the mind of truth, and the mind of love, bringing out perhaps according to the context that when she speaks about mind, that it is the creative, intelligent factor in being, which is impelled by the impelling power of life, which makes that mind factual through truth and gives to that mind a fulfilled sense through love. These are combinations which, the moment one knows those root notions of divinity, those seven synonymous terms, well enough, and when we are familiar with them, just as we are with the mathematical digits, that then naturally all these combinations just begin to sound and give a harmony and a symphony, a spiritual symphony that really makes the textbook more alive than ever before. As a matter of fact, she can combine more than just three or four. She can actually take all seven and present all seven in one go, and there we come then to the deepest and the most fundamental concept of being when she uses those seven together. And I will come back to that after a while. Namely, we can see that mind, because it is referring to God, will overlap with spirit, with soul, with principle, with life, with truth, with love. Or in other words, we could say that if I want to understand mind in its fullness, then I have always to see mind as being defined through spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. And if I don't define mind through all the other synonymous terms, my concept of mind is not full. It's not full. And so it is with spirit. If I only have spirit, it gives me a certain accentuation of God as spirit. But the full sense of spirit I will only get if I define spirit through the other synonymous term. If I define spirit through mind and soul and principle and life, truth and love. So that actually we come to a very beautiful exercise in the spiritual realm of consciousness, that we just can take those seven synonymous terms and see each one in combination with all the other synonymous terms. It is a 7 times 7, which is one of the greatest field of consciousness or array of consciousness or even matrix of consciousness, which gives us the full sense of the seven synonymous terms. Did I make that clear? And if not, it doesn't matter. We will make it clear later on. But you can see that what we do, we use again the method of every science. The method of science is to take a subject that is indefinite and analyze it until we see the whole through its parts. Then, when we have used the method of analysis, then in every science you do the next one, the next step, namely to use the method of synthesis, where you put the things together again, where that which has been analyzed in its parts is then synthesized or integrated again back. But when we have used those two methods of analysis and synthesis, the term from which we have gone out, or the subject from which we have gone out initially, is then afterwards understood. If we take, for instance, the term God, and go out from the term God is indefinite. Everybody has its own concept of God. But if we analyze it, as Mrs. Eddy has done it, and splits up the ray of light into the seven colors, into the spectrum, into the seven synonymous terms and then further analyze each synonymous terms through the ideas characterizing those seven synonymous terms. Then we have made those steps of analysis. Then from that point we begin to synthesize it again through the lens of science, and we begin to see that each idea and each synonymous term cannot stand by itself, but must always be defined through all the other synonymous terms. And so we synthesize them again and come together, and at the end we can say, when we have those seven times seven reflecting each other, we can say, this whole thing is called God. And we have again the same term, but then God is a God that is understood. So the whole process which we have, which we apply, is the process of taking a undefined subject and making it defined, understood. So this is the method we are using. I just want to give you one or the other example that Mrs. Eddy uses in combining synonymous terms, so that perhaps with one or the other example I can bring out the combination, the computation of synonymous terms. Just as in mathematics, so also in spiritual mathematics, we use the computation method of computing synonymous terms. For instance, let's take mind as it is computed with spirit. I take here a statement from the textbook where she says, mind is God, and God is not seen by material sense. Because, and now you see the reasoning, the exact reasoning, because mind is spirit. See, can you see? She states that mind is God, and God is not seen materially. Therefore, it must be seen spiritually. Therefore, she must combine mind and say mind is spiritual. So, because mind is spirit, which material sense cannot discern. Can you see how she deals with the sense that mind cannot be discerned materially, that it can only be discerned through spirit? And so she had to make that computation of mind and spirit in this specific case. Or let's take one, mind with soul. Here's a good one. She says, but the seed is in itself, that's from the third day of creation, but the seed is in itself only as the divine mind is all and reproduces all. See, here she tackles now mind not as intelligence. She tackles now mind, the producing mind, as that which reproduces itself. And we know from the synonymous terms that reproducing, reappearing, re-establishing the identity is a quality of soul. And so she would say, mind is the soul of all. I know so well that the students who read that never really could get why she said that mind is the soul of all. What does that mean, that mind is the soul of all? But when you read it in the context and you know your spiritual mathematics, you see at once what she wants to say. That in the days of creation where mind is the creator, mind is the creator. But when it comes to the third day where she wants to show that that creation is the seed within itself, the constant reproduction of itself, the constant re-resurrection of itself, the constant re-identifying of itself, that is the third day of soul, she had to introduce and say, you know, that mind is the soul of all, meaning that mind, the creator, is that which can reproduce constantly everything which needs to be reproduced. So say, if you had a case in your practice where you feel that some part of what belongs to an identity has been lost and should be reproduced, then you would not just deal it with mind, which is the producer, because then the creator, but you would see that that mind is soul, because it reproduces what? The identity. It does not create something new. It reproduces the old identity and re-establishes that which apparently has got lost, there is no loss in soul. Can you see how absolutely clear and specific her language is? But one has to know the tones, the tonality. I like that suggestion of tonality. Shall I read you again in order to see the flow of that? But the seed is in itself reproduction. Only as the divine mind is all and reproduces all. Mind is the soul of all. Yeah? Or let's take, oh yes, that quotation was in 508:2. Do you want me to give the other one I had before on spirit? All right. That on spirit was mind of spirit, 310:29. So the last one was on soul. Let's have one on principle. Say on page 262:28, she says there that every concept which seems to begin with the brain begins falsely. You know, when you read that, your ears are already perked up and says, oh, she's speaking about mind, huh? The counterfeit of mind. About the brain and the concept, and every concept begins with, instead of with mind. If it starts with the brain, it's a false, it's a counterfeit of mind. Full stop. Then, divine mind. Can you see how she comes in and corrects it? The moment she has picked up a wrong wrong presentation, which she has to do in the Christian Science textbook, in the saving textbook, where she has to deal with the false arguments. The moment she presents a proposition that is wrong, she comes in and gives the answer to it, and so corrects it right away and says, the divine mind is the only cause or principle of existence. It's the only cause or principle of existence. So here she combines that the divine mind is the principle of existence, you see, mind principle, and says, don't start with yourself from your human standpoint, start from the principle standpoint. And from the principle standpoint, the divine mind is the principle of your thinking. Isn't it beautiful? Can you see that these synonymous terms have not just been chosen in order to make beautiful literature? It's spiritual mathematics. It's a textbook. And a textbook doesn't try to be a nice literary book. It has to be exact. Let's take one of life together with mind on 331:5. She says, life is mind. Can you see? Life is mind, you see? She defines one synonymous term through the other synonymous term. But the moment she does that, she brings out a very clear-cut, unique value. What could she bring out with that? And she says it very clearly, life is mind, namely the Creator, that's mind, reflected in His creation, fatherhood. As long as we have mind, the Creator, we have not yet the Son. Only when we see that Creator as the Father, you can't have a Father without the Son, or He is not the Father. As long as a couple has no children, they can't say, I'm the Father and she is the Mother. There must be children there. There must be a creation there. And so life is showing the fatherhood of it, which says that life always has its creation, its Son. Or let's take truth. Now, which one shall I take? Yeah, there is one here, perhaps. 453:29. It says, the Christian Scientist's medicine is what? Mind. Yeah? Huh? You got it already, huh? It's mind. Because we know that mind is a medicine. And she could leave it at that, but she doesn't. She makes a comma and defines that mind with truth. Then she says, comma, the divine truth. But when she puts in the divine truth, she must say something about that medicine which is of the nature of truth. Namely, truth is the remedy. It's not enough to take a medicine and die. We have to see that we take the right remedy, the right medicine. The right medicine heals. The right medicine is the right remedy. So she says, the Christian Scientist's medicine is mind, comma, the divine truth that makes men free, that heals, that is the remedy, that gives that freedom, that gives health. So the moment she defines mind through truth, she gives to the medicine the right remedy and the healing. Let's take one with love, 510:18, for instance. She says, love alone, I should pronounce it differently, really, love alone can impart the limitless idea of infinite mind. Can you see, the moment she says, what on earth could give the highest sense of mind, the highest idea of mind? Well, then only love can do it, because love is the highest, the climax, the glory, huh? The summit, the maximum. And so alone love, which is the completion, the perfection, can give the limitless idea of mind. And so you could go on, you know. So the textbook becomes spiritual mathematics. Those statements you begin to see are so exact, and so they give so much more information to the reader than if we don't know those synonymous terms. And just read over them. Yes.